Well, Steve, thanks. And as you know, I always enjoy being on the show. Not too often I'm mixing the Masters and the Steelers. In fact, never. And but I am missing the Masters for the first time in 23 years because of the Steelers season. And I'll be honest with you, as much as I always hate to miss the event, I'm not disappointed, Steve, because I don't know that I want to be down there in that environment with no fans and everything just being so strange and eerie. I have to deal with that with for the most part, although just starting to pick up empty NFL stadiums. The last thing I want to do is be at Augusta like that. It just wouldn't be the same.
So what's the experience like for the first time in nearly a quarter century watching it on television?
Well, that's what's strange. I feel like I'm watching the 2015 Masters or something on the Golf Channel, but not, and just seeing those empty areas around the greens and around the tees, especially Tiger's out there. You know, there's 15,000 people following Tiger, 10,000 following Rory, just as many following Phil on a given day. And just seeing nobody out there aside from one family member, a spouse, and maybe I think you're allowed one other person. You're allowed a spouse and like a coach or a friend or something per player, and there's 90-some players, and then you have some volunteers. So do the math. There's a smattering of people out there, but they're not the patrons, they're not the gallery, they're not the people that are going to be roaring and cheering and shaking the ground, that's for sure.
Which is something where you're sitting, you see guys back off of putts because they hear the roar on 16.
There were several famous instances, and the one in particular was in 86 when Jack birdied 16 and Seve was on 15 in the fairway. And he heard the roar, and he waited. And when he heard the roar, then he hit his next shot in the water. And, he made bogey, and that gave Nicklaus the lead.
Yeah, and that's Jack, what created the roar is Jack almost jarred it.
Right.
When he hit it just past the hole, and it rolled past the hole and just missed going in, then he just sunk the putt. And then you're right, Seve put it into the water.
The great story there, too, is his son Jackie, when he hit the shot, he says, "Be good," and Jack said, "It is."
Tiger today, when I watched him, and I'll get to the Steelers here in a few moments, but in watching Tiger, I felt like I was watching, for the most part, a guy with a game plan that, for the most part, executed that game plan. Would that be fair?
I think that's not only fair, I think that's spot on. And look, Tiger doesn't need a game plan. I mean, he has one because it's in his head. It's the same one all the time. He knows how to play the golf course. But it's kind of like in football. You can have a great game plan, but if you can't execute it, it's no good. And that's what I notice. And, of course, that's what you're hearing. He's swinging very easy. You'll hear the commentators talk about that. You can see he's smiling on the golf course. Seems very relaxed. He seems to be playing an easy round of golf, totally in control of his ball off the tee, of what I've been able to see. Did not make a bogey. I was shocked to hear that's the first round in a major in which he didn't make a bogey in the last 108 rounds.
Wow.
That just seems striking to me. But that's how in control of the ball that he was. He looked very good. I mean, a lot of guys, it looked like easy playing out there. And you know what, Steve? You see that a lot in the Masters in the first round. You see a lot of 65s and 66s all the time. And that's what you see today. And then it'll get, obviously when the pressure ramps up on the weekend, it'll get a little bit tougher. But the first round is never a backbreaker. There are birdies to be had because they usually want to get the people around the golf course. And, you can see that the greens are not very fast at all. But what I thought would happen, though, I know they had rain, but when they had to overseed with rye over the Bermuda.
Yes.
When they do that, in order to get it green and to grow, you got to water the heck out of it. And so you knew that the golf course wasn't going to play firm and fast because, they had to get that overseed to kick in. And that's what it is. You could see it. The balls just aren't tumbling the way they typically would in the spring.
And this is a subtlety that you and I have talked about before, but I'll bring it up again. Tiger catches a break that he plays the Thursday morning round and plays the Friday afternoon round because his back could use the extra couple of hours just in case.
right? And of course, now I'm sure he had to start on number 10, which, one, was an entirely different experience for him and anybody else who had to do it.
Right.
And two, you're starting on the hardest hole on the golf course. And so, you know, he came through with par. But you saw some big numbers there early because of that. It's just a tough hole to start on. And you're just not used to starting there. So, look, as different as it is for anybody who has been there, it's just as different, if not even more so. Tiger used the word stark when they talked to him on Tuesday. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, that's you see some areas and some lines and things you would never see because of the galleries. And even like at 11, 12 tee off to 11 green, that's the only place where they have the grandstand. And even that area there, you know, it's just so empty because nobody's there. And it's just you're seeing areas of the golf course you're just not accustomed to seeing.
Bryson DeChambeau had an incredible opening round, including a 7 on 13. Where's he like, right? What's your thought on him and how he plays the game and how it fits into this golf course?
You know, Steve, I did a Masters preview show the other night on ESPN Pittsburgh here, and Andy North was with me. And he said one of the things that he said was he gives Bryson credit for having a game plan to do what he wanted to do, and he did it, and it's worked. Yeah. And what he was doing was very risky, you know, putting on the extra weight, trying to dramatically increase his swing speed for more distance, and it's worked. And of course, so have other parts of his game. You know, he's just not he didn't win the U.S. Open by 6 shots just because he hit the ball farther than everybody else.
Right.
That helped, but he controlled it. He was very accurate with it, and two, he was making putts, and that's what he's going to have to do here. I don't care how far you hit it, but I give him credit for, you know, this guy. He tinkered with the mental part of the game. You know, they call him the mad scientist 2 years ago. Well, now it's the physical part of the game that he has taken on. So he's not afraid to try to get better than everybody else. Mm. And so far it's worked. And Steve, I can't think of a time, especially when Tiger's been in the field, where the talk coming into the Masters was about somebody more than Tiger, and even more so than maybe the number one player in the world, DJ, the hottest player on the planet. All the talk seemed to focus on Bryson DeChambeau, and like Andy North pointed this out the other night. He says, "When was the last time you'd see Justin Thomas, another favorite, number three player in the world, come into an interview room, and the first question isn't about Justin or his game, it's about Bryson DeChambeau?" And that's all anybody wanted to talk about in the media because, and you know, ESPN this morning, Steve, was saying, "We're going to come back with Bryson DeChambeau's opening tee shot in just a minute." They're promoting that. I don't recall them ever promoting Tiger's opening tee shot. Maybe they did, but this was the type of coverage that he's been getting. And it's just been incredible to see. And hey, look, it's captivating. Everybody's watching, and it's just proof that you know, everybody likes the long ball hitter. Everybody always likes the home run hitter, and that's Bryson.
But my advice would be to anybody that's playing the game, play your game. See, I feel like Jordan Spieth hurt himself trying to chase more distance, and he doesn't have to. He has a game that's good for him, and I kind of thought he tried to change his game up a little bit, and I think it hurt him.
When you look at what Jordan Spieth did in 2014, taking Bubba to the end, leading going into the back nine, and then losing by two. And then 15, he goes wire to wire and ties Tiger's scoring record and could have broken it on last hole. He just missed that birdie. And then the next year, in complete control for 65 holes. And then he makes that 7 on number 12 with two balls in the water. Right. What he did in that nearly 3-year span was incredible. His dominance of the Masters, and you know, then after he wins the Masters, going out and winning the U.S. Open, and then the following year winning the British Open. I mean, that stretch that he was on for a young kid. I mean, he was an American star, pushing Tiger's levels. Never would catch Tiger's levels, but that's how big Jordan Spieth was. And I don't want to say he's completely disappeared, but boy, he just continues to tumble, and it's difficult to watch. Because I'll tell you, Steve, he is a gentleman. He's wonderful for the game.
Yes,
anybody who's ever played with Jordan says the same thing. He's a great kid, and you just hate to see him struggle like this.
So now I want to transition over to the Steelers. The report has been the Steelers have been practicing this week as if Ben's going to play. I guess the contact was with Vance McDonald, I guess. But he's tested negative the rest of the way. What have you heard about Roethlisberger?
Well, Steve, before we get into Steeler football, I just want to throw my two cents in on Penn State football.
One, how
disappointed I am at the start. Two, how disappointed I was by that decision at the end of the game when they didn't tell the poor kid to not score the touchdown. Three, the offensive play calling has just been, to me, has been very difficult to watch. And fourth, how bad I feel for Journey Brown and, you know, and what's going on with him. But, yeah, the Steelers are, they're planning on Ben playing and starting. If all goes well, he tested negative. I was told that the other day. And all, you know, but for 5 days because of the contact, he has to stay out. And, you know, when that happens, as long as you have back-to-back negative tests, which, you know, I'm sure he does, he will be fine. So will Vince Williams. That's their anticipation. And will it hurt Ben or the team? I don't think so. I'll tell you where I was surprised at was last month when the Titans in Tennessee had that outbreak. And they didn't practice for 2 weeks.
Right.
And, and then they came out and put up 48 points on the Buffalo Bills and destroyed them.
Yeah.
And they didn't practice at all. I don't think a lack of practice is going to hurt Ben one iota. And so long as everything goes well, they fully expect him to be back Saturday for the walkthrough. He's participating in meetings, you know, obviously. But he'll be fine. I don't think there'll be an issue at all.
Minkah Fitzpatrick, when he came over last year, did so much for that defense. I thought the first part of the season, I thought he played well. But the last two games, his impact has been tremendous. What makes him that kind of big moment player that every defense hopes they have?
Right, and that's exactly what it is. Every defense hopes they have a guy like that. You know, there are guys with tremendous physical ability. I mean, the NFL's rife with guys with tremendous physical ability. Some have more than others to another level. But I think part of it, too, it's what Troy Polamalu had. And I'm not going to say he's Troy Polamalu or compare him, but he has great instincts, a great awareness for the ball, great awareness of where the play is going to go. And he has the skills to take the ball away. A lot of guys just don't do that, but he does. And you know, it's like the guy in basketball, Steve, where he gets a lot of rebounds, or the guy in where they always say, oh, the ball comes right to him, or the guy in hockey who gets what they call garbage goals in front of the net. Well, you know what that is? That's knowing where to be and how to be around the ball, anticipation. And Minkah's a tremendous athlete. That pass breakup in Baltimore, when you watch him elevate on that play and see how high he actually is, and his hip is on the guy's helmet, that's the kind of athleticism the guy has. And he just if teams, and that's why teams don't challenge him a lot. And when they do, they're going to pay for it. And that's why what happened in the second half of last year, after he took that ball away so many times and made, had those fumble returns and interception returns for touchdowns, teams stopped testing him. And people said, well, why isn't Minkah making plays? Well, that's because nobody wanted to go at him the way teams would stay away from Ed Reed in the Baltimore Ravens secondary. And,
right.
And yeah, he's a tremendous player, no question.
Jerry, what's it going to take to make a step up the rung of the ladder for the running game to make Ben even more dangerous because they can run the ball better? What will that take?
You know, Steve, that's a good question, because I'm not sure it's something that is fixable beyond changing your mindset and your technique. And by that I mean, this offensive line, and rightfully so, is built to protect Ben. And they are a team that sets a wall, they drop step, they don't fire out. Oh, look, now if you know they're going to run the ball, they do. But they're not. That's not in their DNA. They're not wired that way. And so I think there needs to, and when I say there needs to be, I mean in terms of if you really want to improve the run game, they have to change that mindset and that technique. But as long as Ben is there and he's your star, he's your $100 million guy, I get it. Your team and your offense is built around Ben. Now, we've seen them have success this year, Steve. But if you look, that success running the ball, decent numbers, are in the second half after they've built a lead. Now, in the last two games, they've played from behind. They've had double-digit deficits in the second half in each of the last two games. So Ben has had to go hurry up and no huddle and throw. And so the Steelers aren't that. They're not the Cleveland Browns. They're not the Baltimore Ravens. They're not the Tennessee Titans. They're not the type of team that, even if they're trailing, are going to hand it to their running backs 30, 35 times a game and just figure, look, we're not going to abandon our running game. The Steelers, that's not their style. That's when they turn to Ben, and you know the results of that. So
sure.
If they get the lead, and then in the second half they run the ball decently, but they're not the type of team that's going to come out and set the tone of a game by running for the most part. And so I think to change that, to get onto that level, it's going to require a major change. And I mean, you're just not going to see that because, again, that's not the way they're built.
Right. Jerry, it is always a pleasure. Always. Really enjoyed it. Sit there, talk golf, talk a little Steeler football. It was a blast.
Well, Steve, you know I always enjoy being on with you. And, I know you're off to a tough start there with the Nittany Lions. But, hey, anytime you want me on, you know I'm glad to come on and chat with you.
Thanks, my friend. Appreciate you very much.
Stay well, Steve.